Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, and welcome to Great Loop Radio, brought to you every Friday morning at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time by America's Great Loop Cruisers Association. AGLCA and our Admiral sponsors, Dog River Marina and Boat Works, Dozier's Regatta Point Yachting Center, Dozier's Waterway Guide and Magazine, Green Turtle Bay Resort, Marina Life, Richardson's Map Tech, Passage Maker Trawler Fest, and Skipper Bob Publications invite you to join us as we explore the Great Loop every Friday morning with a show chock full of information that's useful to you whether you're dreaming of, in the midst of, or planning a trip around the Great Loop. And don't forget to visit our ship store at www.greatloop.org/ship-store. Thanks and enjoy the show.
Welcome, everyone. This is our weekly America's Great Loop Cruisers blog radio segment. Our home port crew is here as usual. Beth, our marketing coordinator, and Steve, our techie. And I'm Janice, and I am the customer service person, and they call me the director. For those non-members out there listening to this show, the Great Loop is the continuous waterway that includes the eastern portion of North America, including the Atlantic and Gulf intracoastal waterways, the Great Lakes, the Canadian Heritage Canals, and the inland rivers of America's heartland. Many people don't even know this loop actually exists. Our association was formed to share with people the sense of adventure and the curiosity about the Great Loop. Our purpose is to disseminate information and enhance the overall experience. Our website is www.greatloop.org. We'd love for you to visit. There's a host of free information that you can gather about the loop on the website. And if we've whet your interest, then please join. We're very excited to welcome our guest host this week, Ron and Ever Staub. The Staubs were the original founders of AGLCA, and they are authors of the well-known book, Honey, Let's Go to Boat, and several other books and articles. The Staubs are going to talk about their Great Loop trip and the founding of the association. Ron and Eva, welcome.
Welcome to you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Let's get started with first, how did you hear about the Great Loop before you even started your adventure?
Well, in 1990, when we were living in California, another couple and us chartered a single screw-faw tug on the Trans-Severn Waterway, and Bob Cajun, we met a big white swan, a white trawler from Virginia, and we asked him, well, how did you get here in the Trans-Severn Waterway from Virginia? And he said, by way of the Mississippi. And then we began to question further how he got there and where he was going. He was going to the East Coast, and we discovered that he was circumnavigating eastern North America. We didn't know this could be done, and we didn't know what it was called, and he didn't either. So that was really the first time that we heard about the circumnavigation possibilities. This really existed for many years. There were sailors that were doing this in the early, late 1900s. So it wasn't a new phenomenon, but it was not a popular thing to do.
Do you know where it got its name, the Great Loop or the Great Circle Loop, since it wasn't named at that point?
Well, we, in 1993, we heard of another circumnavigator who was doing and he called it the Great Circle. And then we found out that there are a number of people that call it the Great Circle, but in our preparation for doing this trip, we started taking classes with the United States Power Squadron and the United States Coast Guard Auxiliary, and we found out that the Great Circle, in boating nautical terminology, really refers to something else, and this really didn't satisfy the definition of the Great Circle terminology. So as we were starting our trip, we picked up a waterway guide. It was the Great Lakes edition, 1994, and in that was an article concerning doing this circumnavigation I think that Walter Cronkite was on the cover, and he called it, or this the magazine, the Waterway Guide, called it the Great Loop. And so we said, okay, this is an authoritative publication on cruising, and so this must be the term for it. And so we picked up on that. We found out later that one of the Waterway Guide writers, a guy by the name of Stark Ferris, he's passed away, actually picked up the name from somebody else who had a small publication way back around 1980. And so he was originally the originator of the term Great Loop.
Wow. Now, I know you did the loop, and that was basically one of your very first boat trips. What was your motivation? What called out to you?
Well, our first trip was on the Trans-Siberian Waterway when we chartered a single-screw tug. then we went to the Caribbean and were visiting in St. John's and St. Thomas and saw cruisers on the waterway there and thought that really looked so splendid. And then we also took a commercial cruise on a cruise ship. And those all piqued our interest in boating. So we began to take courses with the United States Power Squadron and the Coast Guard Auxiliary in California. And we tied up with a number of boaters there. And was really Eva's idea. She got the...
Ron, I've heard that, Eva. What made you want to do it?
Well, Ron had been travel writing. He was writing when we first met. And he was writing for newspapers and magazines. And he was kind of running, mostly what he wrote about was what to see and do on the central coast of California. He did other stories, too. In fact, that first story of our Trans-Severn trip was published in, I think, Lakeland Boating Magazine. So we thought, well, maybe there's a lot of stories that we could publish and if we got into doing the Great Loop and doing more boating. So that was our motivation originally was travel writing, continuing this avocation of Ron's of travel writing.
Yeah, it looked like there were endless opportunities for photography and episodic writing, so we thought that this, we loaded the cameras and bought a lot of film and thought that this would be what we would do for a year.
Fantastic. And when did you start the loop?
We started the loop in February of 1994. We took a couple of years of preparing ourselves for this boating experience. And so we bought a boat in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, and started from there in February of 1994.
And that was one of your first experiences with really owning your own boat, wasn't it?
Yes, it was my first experience of ever owning a boat. Ron had had sailboats and canoes, little runabout kind of sailboats, nothing major, and canoes, but... This was nobody. People in the power squadron couldn't believe it when we told them we were going to go buy a 40-foot trawler, and they didn't know anyone whose first real boat was a 40-footer.
Yeah, well, I was the guy with heavy with nautical experience, having had canoeing in Quetico Provincial Park in Canada, and had a little 14-foot sailboat. But yeah, that was it. So getting out a 40-foot trawler was. Overwhelming. It was a giant ship, and it was very intimidating, and we were intimidated and on edge for many months until we really got the hang of it. But we thought if we could do day one, then we would do day two and add to it, and it was a very rapid learning curve, but we didn't crash, never went aground.
Never damaged a prop.
Yep.
Ended up on schedule and pretty much on budget.
When you say on schedule, did you actually schedule the loop, and how long did it take you to finish it?
Yes, we scheduled it. We figured it would take us around 9 months. We figured 3 months going up the East Coast, starting in Florida, 3 months across the Great Lakes. Our plan was to be in New York by the 1st of June, spend the summer in Canada, be in Chicago around the 1st of September, and be back to Florida around the 1st of December. I had taken a year's leave of absence from my job, so they were only going to let me be gone for no more than a year. So we were actually gone for about 10 and a half months. We also decided that the loop in a counterclockwise direction was preferable to doing it in a clockwise direction, which the two previous ones that we knew who was doing had done the loop, the one in Bob Cajun and the one who did the Great Circle in 93 had both done it clockwise. And the reason it's better to do it counterclockwise is we felt, this was after doing two or three years of research, was that in each case they were on the East Coast in the fall, and we all know what happens on the East Coast in the fall. That's hurricane season.
Uh-huh.
And so, and they were going, bucking the current on the rivers in the spring, which they're in flood, or in the case of 93, he really was in flood. So we thought maybe it's better to do it counterclockwise and be on the East Coast in the spring when the river's on in flood and be on the river system when there's hurricanes running around the East Coast. So we advocated doing it that way.
Yeah, the voters that were doing it clockwise were ending up on the East Coast around September. That's pretty much the end of the voting season in Canada. But the hurricane season lasts well into November.
Yes.
So they were in prime condition to have heavy weather on the East Coast. And they were all bucking current. Pete Kopczak is a guy from Nashville who left in 93 from Nashville on the Cumberland River, got into the Mississippi where there were 6-knot currents. He had an 8-knot boat, and he did 2 miles an hour for as long as he could endure that, but then he got himself tied up to a tow. He worked for a tow company, and they put him on the hip, and they hauled him up to the Illinois, and then he set him free, and he went on his own from that point on. But, yeah, his example was, well, we learned from that and said, no, this is not the way to do it.
Honestly, as far as you know, are you the first creators of the counterclockwise loop?
Well, I'm sure we weren't the first creators of much of anything, but no, in fact, we know
we were
that,
with other boaters.
Yeah, there were a lot of other boaters that were doing it the same way. But more recently, we have heard of A Year in a Yawl. It's a book about three young men who actually did the Great Loop before it became the loop. They did this in
1897
in a home-built sailboat with, of course, no motor at that time. And they actually did it that way. They were smart enough to go down the Illinois and down the Mississippi River instead of coming up.
Uh-huh.
They were a powerless sailboat, so they entered. They left in October, Lake Michigan, got into the Illinois-Michigan Canal, and then caught the rivers. By the time they get to St. Louis, they were experiencing ice flows coming out of the Missouri. So it was very. It was timely, but a little late. They started way too late, and they got home a year later, about the same time coming through the Great Lakes in late October. That's a terrible time to be in the Great Lakes.
Uh-huh. Okay, what were the highlights of your trip? I know there's probably too many to talk about, but what really stands out?
As you said, there's way too many to talk about. But one of our first highlights, I think, was anchoring. We had decided one way to do it more, do the trip very economically, especially since we spent a lot of money on repairs and improvements to the boat. We needed to cut corners wherever we could, and we decided to anchor. And our first anchoring experience, I think, was a very memorable one. And after that, we did a lot of anchoring. So mostly our memorable experiences are at anchorages, at least for me.
Had you had a chance to practice at home? Well, you really didn't practice. You didn't have your boat until you started.
That's right. Yeah,
we were approaching Coco, I think, on the third or fourth day out, and we were going to drop the hook, and we just really didn't know how to do this. And we were talking to some sailboats that were also hanging on the hook, and they were not at all helpful.
Really?
And as it turned out, we went into a marina there, and in the morning I dropped down into the engine room and found it flooded. And we had trouble right there in River City and spent the next 3 weeks on the hard. That was the low point in the trip, spent $8,000, which we thought we didn't have but somehow created. And then finally got going again, and it was around Jacksonville that we finally had this really nice anchoring experience, which became a significant section of the book. And from that point on, we had all very good experiences with almost all boaters. Everywhere we went, we were befriended by people who recognized our greenness and our ineptitude and comforted us and educated us and kept us going.
And they would share things with us. Someone shared us the book about anchoring on the in the ICW. I think that book is now a Skipper Bob book. Originally, it was a Delaware Power Squadron publication, and that's what it was.
Uh-huh.
We had other people. We wanted to go up. We wanted to explore more of Chesapeake Bay and go up the Onancock River to the little town of Onancock. And as I was studying the charts, I realized that we didn't have the charts to go up the river. And so we went into the marina and were talking to one of the sailboaters there. And he says, "Oh, I've got charts aboard up for that river." So we said, "Can we borrow them?" And he says, "Oh, no, you can have them." So he gave them to us. Other people threw us guidebooks and various things that would be helpful and recommended places for us to go or where we books we didn't have. And so, you know, as everybody says, it's the people you meet. The boaters are a wonderful community of people, and they're very helpful. So that's got to be one of the highlights. In addition,
that's great.
The places that we were. We loved the North Channel. We loved the Chesapeake Bay. We were in a marina right across from the Twin Towers in New York City. We loved the rivers. We relaxed when we got into the river system after we got off of the Big Bad Lakes. There are just too many highlights to
The Heritage Canals of Canada are a must. There are books that are written that go through the Erie and into Erie Canal, which is America's heritage canal, and then into Lake Erie, and then into Lake Huron and across the Straits of Mackinac, and they skip or miss the Trans-Severn Waterway and the Rideau Waterway of Canada. This is an error. They are missing a really essential part of this trip. Those two heritage canals in Canada, which leads into Georgian Bay and the North Channel, are most precious. These are wonderful, wonderful places to spend the summer. This is where we first had our taste of boating from California on the Trans-Severn Waterway, and it was always a favorite place to return to.
Our own heritage canal, of course, is the Erie Canal and the New York Canal system. When you get to Troy or Waterford, New York, you have to make a choice as to whether you're going to go left or west on the Erie Canal or whether you're going to go straight north and go in the Champlain Canal and up through Lake Champlain and onto the St. Lawrence River. So that's a major choice that people have to make. And you can't do both unless you've got a lot more time than we did. And so we made the choice because we wanted to go north into Lake Champlain and then up into the St. Lawrence because we wanted to go to Montreal and we wanted to do the Rideau Canal. One of the limitations on people doing this trip is that if you go the way we did, you have to be able to clear 17-foot fixed bridge. I think it's marked as 15.8, but they can lower the pool to 17. But if you can't, if there's no way you can get under a 17-foot fixed bridge, then you have to do the Erie Canal and go out at Oswego into Lake Ontario. There's a 21-foot clearance that way. If you can clear even lower bridges like 15-foot fixed bridges, you can go all the way to the Erie, all the way out to Buffalo. But that puts you into Lake Erie, which isn't prime cruising ground. So there's choices that you have to make when you do this trip.
Yeah, the unfortunate thing in selecting to go into Lake Champlain is that you're just bypassing the Erie. You don't even touch the Erie Canal. And you've got to then come back some other time, which we have done with a small trailer boat. We traded up to Kingston, I believe, put in there and did all of the Erie Canal as well as the Thousand Island area. But we didn't have that opportunity on the trawler because we had gone straight ahead out of the New York Canal system into Lake Champlain and then the Chambly Canal into the St. Lawrence and then upstream on the St. Lawrence to Montreal.
Sounds absolutely beautiful and some major decisions. Talking about decisions, which of you first had the idea of the association?
Well, I did. As I said, Ron had been a writer, and many of his columns in California had been turned into books. In fact, he's got 3 books on what to see and do on the central coast of California. So after we did this trip and had so many experiences, we decided to publish it as a book. When we did the trip, our friends and family wanted us to keep them informed. Well, we did this in 94. This was before people had internet, before they had cell phones, before they had blogs. So our way of keeping our friends and family informed was that we published a newsletter about one every 3 weeks or so. We had to go find someplace to print out copies and mail them back to friends and family. Well, that set of newsletters became the rough draft for a book, and we said, well, let's just expand on these newsletters and print it, and publish this, or see if we can find a publisher that will publish this book. Well, we sent out book proposals to numerous nautical publications or publishers, and we had one that said he was ready to give us a contract, but they were primarily sailboat publishers, book publishers, and they did a sailboat magazine, and they decided at the last minute to stick with sailing, which is what they do. They had never done anything as far as publishing anything about powerboating. So as days and weeks and months went by, we said, if this book is ever going to be published, we're going to have to publish it ourselves. So we published it ourselves. I'm the techno geek. Ron's the creative person. I'm the techno geek. So I sat at the computer for months on end putting this into PageMaker and then organizing the book. And we proofed it and chose photographs and all the layout and things like that. And so we ended up with, I think our first print run was 2,200 copies of the book in our garage. And meanwhile, we had moved from California to Tennessee because I couldn't do this while I was working full-time. This was a full-time job, publishing this book. So we got the book in our garage, and it's like, okay, now what do we do with this? And so how do we let the world know that we've got this wonderful book?
We didn't have 2,200 relatives.
Or friends that were willing to buy the book.
So did you still have room for the car in the garage?
What?
Well, we took one of the bedrooms in the lower level of the house and made it into a book room.
That's right.
And then later we dug out the basement and conditioned it, and so now they're in the basement. Right. The books have been moved around.
So I said, well, let's start an organization. Let's do a newsletter. We'll do a newsletter about every other month, and we'll put excerpts from the book and advertisements for the book, and maybe we'll get some interest in the newsletter and an association, and then we'll sell the book too. So originally the association was a marketing tool to sell the book. That was the whole idea for it.
And because we had done this purposely with the intent of writing about it, we took good notes every day. I was walking around with a handheld recorder in my pocket, and all of our thoughts and feelings were immediately recorded and then transcribed every night, and we had the cameras out all the time. So we had, you know, really done this very carefully, and thought we really had a useful thing for other people. And there was just a modicum of information on the Great Loop, not called the Great Loop at that point, not called anything at that point. And so we thought that this would be useful to those who were circumnavigating. We knew of people who were circumnavigating with us, but it wasn't many people, and the information available to us was scant. So we thought there's got to be good information presentable, available to people who might aspire to this. We didn't realize at the point how much pent-up interest there was in this.
Well,
how did you market the association? I mean,
what?
How did you find the people who were interested?
Well, when we had the book, we thought, well, how are we going to tell people about the organization, about the book? So
sure.
I started searching on the internet, and I ran across the Trawler Fest. It wasn't Passage Maker; it was West Marine Trawler Fest at that time. And so I contacted George Kolesnikov, who was the originator of the Trawler Fest, and said, we have this book, we have this program, we can give seminars on the Great Loop, we can give seminars on locking. So he immediately signed us up, and we did our first Trawler Fest in April of 1999. The book had just come off the press in March of 1999. So we went down to Florida, to Melbourne, to the first Trawler Fest that we attended, and gave the they already had someone doing a seminar on what they were calling the Great Circle. So they didn't want us to do it, but we did a seminar on locking through. And then they liked us enough that they invited us back to the next one, which was Solomon's Maryland in September of 1999. And they said, we want you to do the one on the Great Loop there. So we did the seminar on the Great Loop. And when we were at the first one, we had a sign-up sheet. We said to people, if you're interested in becoming a charter member of a boating organization about doing the loop, sign here. So we had 14 people sign up for it from that Trawler Fest. Summer of 99, I wrote letters to the editor of all the boating magazines that I could find addresses and editors' names for, and wrote a letter to the editor about this organization. And I started it off with why do people call this the Great Circle? We advocate that this is called the Great Loop for this reason. So I started off with kind of a controversial thing as to whether to call it the Great Circle or the Great Loop. So that was my letter to the editor, and then I said, and by the way, if anyone wants to be a charter member of a Great Loop organization, contact me, and that was my contact information. And so that was, we were off and running from that, and then the Trawler Fest in the fall at Solomon's, we signed up a whole bunch of more people, and it was kind of word of mouth. We got our website going later that year, and then there were articles written about us and by us and by the organization and reviews of the books. And so it just one thing led to another, and there were days.
Fantastic. That's a beautiful story.
And there were days.
I know you guys are still very, very active, but why did you give up the management of the Great Loop, of the association, I should say?
We are way too successful. I mean, at that Solomon's meeting seminar in 99, it was a standing room only in a very large room in a hotel. There were a lot of people there interested in the Great Loop. We got a very good reception. And then with these notices that we put in magazines, we were absolutely deluged with applicants wanting to join. So the newsletter got off running. It went from 18 to hundreds, literally. Sometimes our P.O. box had 50 applicants, new applicants, per day. It was just burgeoning. And then they wanted rendezvous. They wanted to meet together along the route, which, of course, was wonderful and what we wanted to do also. And then they wanted shirts and caps.
Well, first they wanted a burgee. They said, well, this is an organization. We ought to have a burgee. So the first product after our book, our Honey, Let's Get a Boat book, was the burgee that Ed Huff, a graphics designer, helped us design the burgee and the logo that you use now. So that was all his work. And so it was burgee and then rendezvous and then caps and shirts and, I mean, just one product after another. It just became too much for two of us to handle. At one point I said to Ron, something's going to have to change, or we're going to have to start hiring staff. We didn't have an office. Our office was in our home. This was a home business. And we said, we're growing too much, and there's just too much to do, that we're either going to have to hire staff or find someone else to take this over.
My staff was Eva. Eva's staff was me. And so we were just super busy. Three rendezvous a year, six newsletters a year. The phone was running off the hook. We became a mom-pa loopers, advisors to many people who were very curious about many things that we really weren't familiar with. And we soon learned that our greatest resource of information was the membership. So the newsletter became rich in experiences of people who were more resourceful than us in many areas. such as mechanics, for example. They had done side trips. They had insights that we didn't have. So the Great Loop newsletter became really very useful. It was a compendium of information in a short order.
Well, I really appreciate you telling us about the history and your loop. It's a fascinating story, and the association continues to grow. Ron and Eva, thank you very, very much. If there's anyone out there who would like to become a part of the association, go to our webpage at www.greatloop.org and click Join AGLCA. Again, Ron and Eva, this has been great. Thank you for your time. We appreciate it.
Thank
and
you.
Anyone who's coming to the rendezvous in Norfolk in about 3 weeks, Ron and Eva will be there. So come on by and say hello. They'll be having a book signing in our ship store, and you can get your copy of Honey, Let's Get a Boat. They also have a book about side trips of the Great Loop, and there's the funny book, A Cat Called Canoe. That's it for now. Anybody else have anything to say?
Okay. Thank you for having us. We enjoyed this.
Well, thank you for doing it. We will talk to you soon, and we'll see you in about 3 weeks in Norfolk.
Okay, very good.
Looking forward to it.
Bye.
Bye-bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.